Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Friday, and welcome to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Each week, Brenda brings you interesting guests and timely topics to uplift and motivate you to be all that you can be today and for all your tomorrows. Join Brenda and Alive to Thrive every Friday at noon Central Time, right here on Greater Good Ministries Radio. And now, here's Brenda Fraser.
Hello, and welcome to Alive to Thrive. We're broadcasting remote today from the St. Charles area. We're actually at the St. Charles Library. There's a symposium going on for people in the hospice community, and there's a lot of activity outside the doors, but we are so thankful that the Community Council of St. Charles County has given us a studio for the show today, because we have two very interesting guests from St. Charles. First, a man who has a shop, but he is actually known nationally and internationally as America's Flower Man. He's traveled all over the U.S. and Canada, teaching and training and bringing the beauty of flowers and gardens to the masses. He's written a couple of books, and he's just a delightful man, and he's done a lot for charities as well. And I want to welcome Dale Roman to the show. How are you, Dale?
I'm quite well, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for being on. You know, I'm sort of humbled by your background, that you've been on HGTV and the DIY Network and, of course, Discovering Channel with a program called Home Matters. And Here you are in Alive to Thrive. And this is special because outside of your professional career, you're the type of person we like to showcase because you live from a heart-centered place, and nothing that's happened to you in your life has stopped your progress or stopped you from giving of yourself. And so I want to talk a little bit first about your background and let our audience know who you are. So tell us, you've been doing flowers for what, 30 some years now?
Oh my goodness, I'm celebrating 55 years, Brenda, in the flower
business.
Of course, I started when I was very, very young. Yeah, 55 years, and I started right out of high school. I had this passion for flowers. In fact, as a child, I wanted to do a garden in the backyard. My father, I thought this was interesting, he was in the produce business. And so he was so excited. Yes, he'd help me get a garden started. But then he got a little disappointed when he went to buy tomato plants, and I said I wanted to plant zinnias and marigolds instead. So my passion has just bloomed ever since then. I guess I was about 8 years old when I put in that first garden.
Now, flowers are just not only a thing of beauty, but people give flowers to acknowledge certain occasions as well as to mark anniversaries and also just to lift the spirit. What has been your motivation and to bring flowers to the world and to lift people up through flowers?
Well, I think of flowers as theologians think of grace, and I think flowers add beauty to our lives. I think that's their sole purpose, and I don't believe that it needs to be a large bunch of flowers. My words have always been a single flower can speak a whole bunch. So you're right, special occasions, weddings and funerals, of course, and births. We always think of flowers. My feeling is that the best reason for giving flowers is for no reason at all. And then you just get to watch the recipient light up. And they do. You give somebody just a single flower, and it's such an expression of love. And my grandmother taught me that. She used to, she had beautiful gardens, and I would go over there in the summertime, and I'd say, "Grandma, can I pick your flowers? Mama won't let me pick flowers out of the yard." And she said, "Yes, you pick them and make bouquets, and then you give them to people, and that's an expression of love." And that has always stuck with me. So that's been my passion all my life, has been flowers. And I think the more, you mentioned my travels around the country, the more people learn about flowers, the more they're going to appreciate flowers, the more they're going to want flowers in their life. I think one of the things that I found difficult to get across is this idea that, oh, well, flowers just die. And of course they do. But the memory of that flower lingers forever. And I think that makes a major difference.
Wow. And I love that. It does bring joy. And I guess that's why I've always liked them as well. But I like that you empower people to get hands-on with them, to learn about arranging, to learn about making wreaths. I was looking up. I didn't know you had two additional books. I know you have the book we're going to talk about that helps ALS. But you have two books, one on A Time for Flowers, published in 1982, and one just in 2003 on wreaths. And the quote was, "Love is the thread that binds it." And that, you know, not just wreaths for special occasions, but wreaths just for everyday beauty. How did you get drawn to writing a book about wreaths? I mean, that's just a specific area.
Yeah, well, wreaths in the flower business has always been one of my favorite things to make. You know, you make wreaths, or you can make a centerpiece, or you can make a bridal bouquet. But for me, for some reason or another, and I'm not real sure why, I've always been drawn to wreaths. And I think maybe it's because of that never-ending circle kind of feel. You know, it just continues and continues. And I love that. And I always think that when you have a wreath hanging on your door, happy people live in that house. So this book that you're referring to was published by a F&W Publications out of Cincinnati, Ohio, and they do craft books. And they contacted me, and they were specific and wanted to know if I would do a craft book on how to create different seasonal wreaths. And so that's how that came about. It was a fascinating experience, and needless to say, it was great fun to do. So,
well, you know you've arrived when a publisher contacts you to write a book on a certain subject, so you must be out there in the world of the Internet and the media and easy to find. And I do want to encourage the listeners to go to Amazon and get his books. They're very reasonable. And or if you're in the Missouri, St. Louis, Greater St. Louis, St. Charles area, Dale has a shop in Newtown, and it's called Secondhand Rose. It's a beautiful shop. It looks like my mother's home, how my mother's home used to look, and beautiful antiques and florals and silks and just all kinds of wonderful gift items. Tell us about your shop, because I know this isn't your first shop. How many other shops have you had?
Well, this is only my second shop.
Only your second shop.
Only my second shop. The first one I had, I went into business for the first time in 1967. And I went into business with a colleague named Moritz Fuchs. And we bought an established flower shop. It was the George Walbart Floral Company in St. Louis. And it was on Clayton Road in Richmond Heights. We eventually moved it in 75. To the Ladue area. And it was sort of then that we really grew, and I loved having the retail shop. And then I sort of reinvented myself several times over my lifetime. So he, as you know, Brenda, he passed away with Lou Gehrig's disease. And I lingered in the shop for a while, and then decided I wanted to branch out and really travel the country and teach people about flower arranging and how they can do it like I always say, at your kitchen sink. And what was fascinating to me was on these home and garden shows, you know, I expected audiences of all women. There was a lot of men who came to these programs, and a lot of them came up to me afterwards and asked for different tips and tricks. And, of course, a lot of them dealt with gardening. Now, I don't have a degree in horticulture. I have a lot of experience in gardening, and I've learned everything I know by trial and error. So, and I'm happy to pass that information on, too. But after I did all the traveling thing and then ended up on some of the how-to shows, and by the way, I was on the Today Show, NBC Today, which I'm very proud of, and I was on that about five different times. Everything linked to flowers and how we need to put them into our lives. Then, unfortunately, a few years ago, my wife passed away. So I moved, a downsized housewife, and moved out here to Newtown. I fell in love with Newtown and bought this building and put this little secondhand rose shop here. It's a secondhand store, and we advertise Once Loved, Still Cherished. We still do fresh flowers on the weekends. We have a special bundle bouquet every weekend. And my good friend Dolly, my four-legged good friend Dolly, and I live in the apartment upstairs. So this is where life has brought us, to Newtown. And I keep telling my kids this is my last hurrah, but you just never know, do you?
Well, I'm most interested, Dale, in your story about having a business with a dear friend that, you know, you worked side by side day in and day out. And,
yes, we did.
You know, you built a business together. And how do you go from having someone that close in your life and losing a friend? Because, you know, part of the reason I have this show, Alive to Thrive, is to inspire
right.
people to move beyond loss and to reinvent themselves. But to move, that we all experience loss and grief in our lives. So how did you process that loss, and how did you incorporate the lessons and the blessings of that, as well as the heartache that comes with a significant loss?
Well, as you know, he died from Lou Gehrig's disease, which is ALS, which is a very nasty, nasty disease. So that was not only devastating for him, of course, but it was devastating for his family and friends like me who were very close to him to deal with such a horrendous disease. And the whole time that he was ill, which was actually a very short period before he passed away, I would take to him flowers almost daily. Flowers that I knew that he liked. And, of course, he got to the point where he couldn't speak. That was important to me, that he see the flowers because he could see them and he could smell them. He couldn't talk about them, but they brought a certain amount of comfort to him. And that was important to me, to keep that going, as well as it was for him, I think. And then after he passed away, I suppose what guided me the most was that passion for flowers can bring joy, even though many times they're used at the time of death. But they're also used to express sympathy and comfort and love, especially love. So it just carried on from there. And I always tease and say, if I cut my wrist, I bleed green. That's how deep my passion is for flowers and how strongly I believe in it. And it's the only thing that has been in my life as far as my family and my children. I mean, I've never had any other career. It's always been flowers, gardens and flowers. So
one of the ways that you have taken that loss, that significant loss, and turned it into a blessing to bless the world is that you wrote a beautiful children's book called Don't Forget to Take Your Umbrella. And
yeah.
I I was so drawn to it because of the lead character's name is Lily, which is
yes.
the name of my mother's angel. And Lily and her animal friends discover the value of friendship, which is really what you discovered with Lawrence. You had
exactly.
a special friendship that, you know, and we have special people that come into our lives, and, you know, they touch our lives in very significant ways. And friendship is something that goes beyond our lifetime. I believe, you know, I just heard a speaker say this recently, that it's not the money and the wealth we take with us, it's the love.
Yeah.
The love that we've shared in our lives is really what we take with us and really is the most important thing. Actually, this was the man who survived the plane crash in the Chilean mountains, the soccer team that crashed in 1972.
Yes.
He was just at Powell Hall. And this was something he talked about. He's a man, owns 4 businesses, speaks 5 languages, travels around the world, you know, extremely, I'm sure, financially comfortable. But his message was the message of friends and family and love, and really that love was the most important thing in our lives to always treasure. So you took your love for your friend, you wrote a children's book, and you give all the proceeds to ALS. And I cannot believe over the course of several years, you've raised something like $4 million. And I think it just goes to show what one person can do to make a difference in the world. What inspired you to write the children's book and give all the proceeds to charity?
Well, to begin with, when Mars was afflicted with the ALS, I wanted to do some sort of a special tribute to him, that the clients that we had served over the years could come and pay a special tribute to him. And because so many of the women would come into the shop and say, oh, I just love what you do, can you teach me how to make an arrangement? That gave me the idea of doing a fundraiser in his honor that would be a hands-on flower arranging class. And it would be followed by a luncheon and some demonstrations, floral demonstrations by professional florists. And that first one was held in April of 1986. He was able to attend. It was down at the Missouri Botanical Garden. I was hoping to raise like $5,000 for the local support group, ALS support group, which had just started in St. Louis the year before. And we raised $25,000 that day, which I thought was absolutely unbelievable. So we repeated that fundraiser several times, always benefiting ALS. And then there was someone came to St. Louis to attend one of those affairs that I gave. They were from the National Association in California. And that opened up the door for me to go to some 24 different cities around the country where they had support ALS support groups. And they developed this fundraiser and would bring me in to help them do that. And that's how that $4 million came to play. And so over a period of all these years, I've been to some of those cities as many as 7 different years to do these hands-on fundraisers where all the ladies get to learn how to make arrangements, and it's a make and take. They get to take them home. And then, of course, I decided that because I had this knack for making money, creating money for the organization, that was my niche. So I tried to expand it and come up with other ideas. And then that's how I came into the children's book. I just felt that the story needed to be told to children, how to listen for the words, I love you, when different words were being spoken to them. And one thing led to another. I wrote the story, and I thought this could be a fun fundraiser for the ALS Association. So that's how the book came about, and we did a limited edition, numbered edition of 200 books. And for a certain fee, whoever would buy that book could have us print their dedication to whomever on the dedication page. And that was a special treat, and it was all in a hard our back cover in a hard case and everything. And then, of course, we did the regular book. So we had two different books, same story, of course. And that's how it came about.
It's just a great story. And I have read it. It's beautifully illustrated.
Yes,
and I love that message, how to listen for the words, "I love you," in other words, and through action. So when the little girl Lily is being told to take her umbrella, "Don't forget to take your umbrella," that was
really her mother saying, "I love
her
you."
Her mother just showing that she loves her. And so that's so, we can all bring love, more love into the world, and we can all demonstrate that by caring for each other and caring for our neighbors. And we have one of your neighbors on hold with us that we're going to speak to right after our break.
Okay.
We're going to come back just in just a couple of minutes and speak with Charles Lupke, who's an architect and owns a gift shop also in Newtown, right down the street from Secondhand Rose and from Dale. So hold on the line, Dale. We'd love for you to stay on with us. And
absolutely.
We'll be right back after this short break and station identification.
We're open for business. The Greater Good Ministries Book and Gift Shop is now open for business, featuring metaphysical and uplifting books from your favorite authors, such as Doreen Virtue, Wayne Dyer, Michael Edward Owens. We've added handcrafted one-of-a-kind jewelry, pendants, earrings, and bracelets, and now have an exclusive selection of crystals, rocks, and stones for your metaphysical toolbox. Take a look at our hand-dug Arkansas crystals, imported Brazilian crystals, Tibetan crystals, and Reiki healing stones. All of our rocks, crystals, and stones have been Reiki infused, blessed, and cleared, ready for use. You can reserve your copy of Crystal Healing 2012 and Beyond, Reverend B's new book, A Comprehensive Guide of Rocks, Crystals, and Stones for the New Age. Visit ggmradio.com and click Bookshop in the menu bar. That's ggmradio.com.
Welcome to the Maya Miguel Challenge. Meet Maya and the gang.
Oh, hi, I'm Maya.
Maya and her friends want you to get up and play, because it's always more fun to be active. Just go to letsmove.gov and look for Maya and Miguel. You'll find tons of fun activities that'll help keep you healthy and active. Whether you play sports, run, dance, or jump in place, just get up and play at least an hour a day. Take the Maya and Miguel Challenge today at letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
You're listening to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Frazier on GGM. And now, back to the show.
Hello, and welcome back to Live to Thrive. We have been talking with Dale Roman of Newtown. He has a shop called Secondhand Rose, and he's a fantastic person. And just next door to his shop is Charles Lupke's shop, called Dwell in Design, and it's a beautiful gift shop with art created by artists from around Missouri, one-of-a-kind items, jewelry, books, and seeds for growing your own beautiful garden. So, Chuck, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Excellent. Well, thanks for being with us today, and I think we originally met through Streetscape magazine, and I know you've been honored as one of their Beyond the Best, and you're just, you know, involved in a lot of things locally in your community, so I wanted to welcome you on and talk a little bit about your background. Now, you've been bringing beauty to the world, not through flowers, but through architecture and design. Tell us how you got started in that field.
Well, it was back when I was in high school. My dad was involved in a project at where he was employed at Concordia Seminary in Springfield, Illinois, and they were going to build a new administration building, and so he was kind of the contact with the architect that was doing the project, and This was when I think I was about a sophomore in high school, and he started talking about how exciting it was to work with an architect, and I'd always been kind of artistic along the way in through grade school and things, and hadn't really decided what to do with my life. And anyhow, as he got to know the architect, he decided to have the architect help him design a home for our family. And so I started accompanying my dad to the meetings that he was having with the architect as they were going through that process. And just essentially I got bit by the architecture bug, and it's been my life ever since then. It's just a tremendous way of creating things in this world that affect everybody that walks into a building. So as an architect, you know, you're creating things of beauty, but you're also creating, you know, buildings that have function, that help people in their daily lives. And this has just been essentially what I guess God created me to be, and I've never thought of doing anything else.
So what's so important about good design? You know, what do you look for? What are some architects that have influenced your work?
Well, probably one that has influenced me an awful lot was Frank Lloyd Wright. He's, you know, the ultimate American architect, is and probably known by so many other people. Robert A.M. Stern is another architect out of New York that has done some tremendous work both in the commercial end of things and higher residential work. But the key for me, I guess, is that architecture is both engineering and structure as well as beauty. And so it's a combination of those two somewhat sometimes divergent areas of experience and impact that an architect does to combine things into something that functions for the people, you know, whether it's a house of worship, whether it's an office building, a museum, a library. All of those have functional needs that the architect needs to address, but the key is to make them beautiful as well in spaces that people enjoy being in and just enhance the experience that they have as they perform the functions that the buildings were designed to do. So that's always been the challenge for architects, and has been the challenge for me throughout my career. Every design project, whether it's a small courtyard like I'm doing here in Newtown now, or a, you know, a major office building or a condominium development, they all have their own specific needs that you try and solve the problem but create the beauty as well.
So I got to see the Dana Thomas house in Springfield, Illinois. I know we talked about this because you're from Springfield, as one of his early designs, and a beautiful home. So for people traveling up to Springfield to see the Lincoln Museum, definitely get by to see that beautiful home. Is there any Frank Lloyd Wright designs in Missouri?
Yes, there's actually one right here in St. Louis. It's down in Kirkwood. It's a private home that Frank did. It's, I believe now it's actually run by the St. Louis County Parks Department. It was a home for Mr. Krause, and you can take tours of that home on special times that they have for tours. But I, as you mentioned, the Dana House in Springfield, Illinois, is just an exquisite example, especially of how Frank Lloyd Wright brought light into a space. Frank designed every aspect of a home, from the major structure down to the design of the windows, which is exemplary in that particular house. Practically all the glass windows in that house are beveled glass designs, and just incredible display of that artistry and craftsmanship. But he would get down to designing every, you know, pillow and piece of furniture that was in the house. And, you know, in that respect, he was, I guess, what I would call the total architect, because he was involved in every aspect. Unfortunately, today I don't think architects are given the opportunity to take it to that amount of detail. We get involved a lot in you know, the basic structure, the design of the building, the finishes, but to design the actual, all the furniture that would go in a building is pretty rare these days. So it's just an attribute to the incredible genius that man had. And he was a fairly arrogant gentleman, as most people who have studied him know, but he had reason to be. He was a genius.
Well, and I think you're a genius in your own way, and without the arrogancy, and I didn't know that about him, actually, and I was just shocked that there were houses within the Midwest that he had designed, because I always think of, you know, Falling Waters or the homes in California, and, you know, I didn't realize that, you know, in the Midwest we had some of his designs. So, and that is true that he had designed the furniture and the interior as well as the exterior, and bringing the house in line with the landscape. And I thought that was very interesting. And bringing light into homes at that time was a radical concept, because that was around the Victorian period, coming off the early 1900s, excuse me. And so do you use light in your designs, or what are some of the things that are your trademark? What's unique to your style?
Well, I guess I look at every project as to how it relates to its immediate environment. You want to be able to capture the pluses that a particular site has, as well as if there are some negatives, you want to try and do the best you can to correct those. I'm real strong on symmetry and axiality, things that line up, which in my particular, the house that I'm living in now, there was a strong sense of that. The thing about good design is that if it's done well, people walk into a space and they know everything works. They may not be able to understand what it is that makes it the right space, or what that axiality or symmetry means, how that impacts the space. But if the design principles are strong in the design, it just becomes a space that people feel comfortable in and feel like everything's right about this space.
I think that relates to balance.
Exactly.
And you walk in and that some, you know, there's all these books now and workshops on feng shui, but it's all about balance. And it's walking in, like you said, that your house shouldn't cause you stress when you walk into it.
Yeah.
Sometimes people, you know, walk in through their garage and everything's upside down and inside out. But to have a place that's gives you a sense of calmness, a sense of centeredness, and a sense of balance. And I think part of that balance, like we were talking with Dale earlier, you know, is having the flowers and the wreath. When the guest comes to your door, they're greeted with a wreath. They come in, they see the flowers, they have the aroma. So it's a total experience. I hadn't planned it that way, but thinking about form and structure and balance and design, but then also the beauty with an element of the natural world. Do you work with natural wood or elements from, if you're designing a home in Missouri versus if you were designing a home in Florida or something, would you work with the landscape and the materials that are known for that area, the stones, et cetera?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's part of the, you know, when you look at where a site is how do you capture the essence of that site in creating the spaces that you're going to? I think the use of natural materials that are native to the area brought into the architecture is just, it helps bring, as you say, the balance or the oneness of the building with the site. The interplay between the outside spaces and the inside spaces is really key in the designs that I create, because it is a totality of experience. Going back to what Frank Lloyd Wright would do with his houses, he oftentimes brought you through a very small, tight entrance because he kind of wanted to shrink your focus down to the fact that you were entering a home, and then as you walked into the home, it started to unfold in front of you. And I think that's a real strong concept that you know, people need to think about as they experience various forms of architecture, whether it be a home or whatever, is what is that experience as you walk through from the outside to the inside of the building? And that relationship between the inside and the outside throughout the building is key to me as mirroring and balancing the outside environment and the inside environment together.
And so one of the things you do with people, for people, is not just design homes and buildings and structures, but you also can do the outside grounds.
Right.
And I know you're working on a master plan for us, for our back of our house, in terms of creating a vision. And I think that's so important. I do a lot of breakthrough coaching with businesses and entrepreneurs. And the first step is really, what is the big vision? And so first, you know, finding out the values of the person you're working with and finding out what's important to them. And then creating that master plan, because it all stems from that vision, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's the key that for me is, what is the client's vision for what they want me to help them create? And the key there is helping. To me, an architect's job is to take that vision that an owner or client has for what it is they want this building to do, and to make it happen for them. So the client is as important part of the design process as the architect is in doing the work, is that constant communication and feedback back and forth that we are on the right path towards creating that vision. And for me, that has just always been number one, is to really understand right from the get-go what it is that we're trying to do and how can I help you get there. And that's kind of how I've, in my practice now as a studio of a one-man shop here in Newtown, is I tell people, you know, your concept of what an architect is may be influenced by television or what you've seen in the past, but here in Newtown and in my practice now, I'm here to help you in any way I can, whether it just means to come over to your house and talk to you for an hour about the possibilities of what you could do and then let you go and do them on your own, or whether you need me to design the whole thing all the way through, that's up to you. And so my goal is to provide a service that assists the client in whatever capacity I can be for them. And it's kind of a breakdown of a barrier. So many people have never worked with a professional design person before, and so there's a kind of mystique there. Well, I don't know whether I can do that. You know, I don't know whether I can afford that. You can, because I'm here to assist you in whatever way I can. I don't have to do that project all the way from start to finish. I'd love to, but it's not necessary. I'm here as a resource to get you to where you want to be.
And let's talk about how you got to the place you are now, because what I like about your story, Chuck, is that you had to reinvent yourself later in life, as so many people do. So many professionals are in a career, and whether they get downsized or the company sells or all these various things happen. And we don't live in the world where someone goes to work for the same company for 50 years and then retires. I mean, people are more and more starting their own businesses, and you have the gift shop, but you've gotten really hands-on with your clients. Can you talk about how, you know, you faced a time in your life where, you know, you sort of hit a brick wall and you had to reinvent yourself?
Yeah. This occurred about 3 years ago. I was working for a fairly large design build construction company, and I found myself one day called into the office and was told that through downsizing of the economy and various other reasons that I was all of a sudden out of a job. And throughout my career, I've worked for numerous firms. I had my own firm with two other partners back in the 80s, but through over 35 years experience, I was never out of work for more than 2 months, and that was when I closed my other practice down and was looking for a job to replace it. So from 1973 until 2010, I had been unemployed for only 2 months of my entire life, and so all of a sudden, here I am at age 60, looking at the prospect of, now what do I do? And so I did hit a brick wall. I was very you know, depressed, obviously, you know, by what had happened. I felt like the rug had been pulled out from underneath me because I thought this was the firm I was going to retire with. And so all of a sudden I had to just reevaluate everything about my life. What was I going to do next? Unfortunately, both the construction industry being down over the past few years, whenever the construction industry down, the architects were down before that. And so at age 60 with earning a six-figure income with the firm I had been, the prospects for a job were basically none. And so I had to sit back and do a lot of thinking about, well, what am I going to do? So my son gave me some real words of encouragement the night I found out I lost my job. He said, well, Dad, you know, one door closes, another door is opening. And so you've got to find that door and you got to start pushing it open and see what happens. And I thought that was some pretty tremendous wisdom coming from my son, as opposed to the father's position is always to pass the wisdom on to the son. But in this case, that role reversed. And I guess my story that I've told to a lot of people is that, yes, you can reinvent yourself. It's not an easy thing to do, but you have to kind of pick up the bootstraps and say, well, what is it that I'm passionate about? Well, obviously, I'm passionate about architecture and good design, but I also was passionate about just reacting with people. And so my son was involved in retail at the time, and he kind of inspired me with the way he was doing his job. And I thought, well, you know, maybe retail and architecture together would be a unique way to provide a service that had not been done before. And so living out here in Newtown, I absolutely love this community. I'm kind of a self-appointed ambassador for Newtown because I think it's one of the best communities that this whole region has to offer as far as a type of new community and focused living experience. We built a house out here 5 years ago, and so I thought, well, when I retire, I'll just set up a little studio and, you know, help people do some projects. So I kind of moved that whole game plan up about 6 years and said, okay, well, now I got to make a living at it. And so combining the retail with it was because whenever you have a home, you always have things in the home that can either help with creating that essence of home, or they can hinder it. So by combining my love for architecture and design with my love for products that you would have in your home, I said, well, let's put these two together. And so that's kind of what I've done here, is that you can find things in this store that I find extremely appealing that would fit in your home, which essentially, you know, create a greater sense of home. One of my favorite lines is basically, I'm here to help you create the essence of home inside and out. And that, again, refers to my design mantra or whatever, that the inside and the outside go hand in hand, and so together you design them all inclusively. So
I like that. It's a holistic approach,
right?
And that is so wonderful because, you know, you can have a beautifully well-designed home, and then it lacks sort of a soul, you know, because it doesn't have a reflection of the people that live in it. Or you can have a home that's full of soul and life and joy and family, and yet it's poorly designed and it doesn't work for them and it doesn't have enough closet space or it doesn't have rooms for future children or entertaining, as in the case of my house. You know, the people that lived in my house prior had two kids and stayed inside, and they had a pool and never even used it, and no patio. And so I'm just the opposite. I love to entertain. I love to have people over. And, you know, so having it have good design as well as reflect the soul and the character of the people that live there. I love that holistic approach. And I love that the concept of creating the essence of home. And I feel like we were talking about sort of that sense of oneness and that Reese bring that never-ending circle. And so I think it's about unity, and it's about beauty, and it's about all these higher values that sometimes in the rush of living. A lot of times people are just, you know, racing off to work, sitting in traffic or rush hour traffic, coming home, collapsing into bed, you know, maybe taking a substance to help them sleep or to alleviate stress, and then they do it all over again. And then there's no quality of life. So I think what you and Dale both represent is elevating a quality of life so that, and regardless of someone's budget, as Dale said, you know, it doesn't take, you know, huge bouquets of flowers to make an impression, one single flower. And I think sometimes people think of working with an architect, it takes a huge budget. And, you know, of course it may take a huge budget if you want a mansion or castle or something, but it doesn't take a lot of money to improve the quality of your home. I mean, sometimes it's just a beautiful pillow or a beautiful piece of art. I know your shop has framed photography, has even some books that are lighthearted books or books that can inspire discussion with your spouse or your partner on your writing your own mission statement. I think that's so cool. You have that book I got there called One. And so let's talk a little bit, Chuck, about Newtown. What is great about living in a small town and knowing your neighbors?
Well, I think to kind of describe what happens here, I have to contrast it to where I lived before. I lived over 30 years in the city of Ferguson. Ferguson has done a lot to try and, promote itself and create great places for people to live. But on my particular block, one of the reasons that kind of surprised me when I moved in is there were no sidewalks. But this community out here is designed to be a walking environment. And it's purposely designed to create community amongst people. One of the strongest elements that are in practically all the house designs is large front porches. And the whole idea, and they're very close, the lots are tight, but the porches are very close to the sidewalk. And so as people move about within the community on their daily life activities, you're constantly seeing people walk by your house. And if you're out on your front porch, you know, it may be a simple hello, but the hello becomes a conversation then over time as you begin to recognize these people. One of the things I have told people that just kind of elevates this whole idea of the community spirit that's out here is I met six of my neighbors before I ever moved into my new house out here. And in my old neighborhood, I was lucky if I knew six neighbors, and I lived there over 30 years. And, you know, that's kind of sad that you could spend your, you know, so much time, but you never got to know your neighbors just because the subdivision wasn't designed for that. It was everybody had their own individual house, and, you know, there wasn't a design for any interaction. And that's what Newtown is so different. One of the things that is kind of surprising is when you come to Newtown, you don't get your mail delivered to your house. You have to go to a community mail center and pick up your mail. And people say, well, what a drag that is. Well, it's not, because you meet people when you do that. And it's right in the center of town. And so it just adds to the possibilities of interaction with your neighbors and with people that you've never met before. And I think
that's the
best thing.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of the activities coming up in Newtown for interactions and building community.
Mm-hmm.
First, we'll be having a book signing at your shop Thursday, May 9th from 6 to 8. And myself and some other authors from the 7 Points of Impact will be there to sign our books. And that book is all about the 7 areas you want to have in balance in your life. We've been talking about balance in the home and in your life. So the 7 Points of Impact is now being carried by Chuck Store, Dwell in Design. And give the address, please, Chuck, for your shop.
Yeah, I have had several of these kind of open house events. And, again, it's about bringing the community in to interact with whoever centers around the event. In this case, this is my first book signing, and I'm tickled to think what, you know, the kind of interaction that we'll have with the three authors that are going to be here, yourself included. We're going to have wine and cheese as well and some other goodies that some friends of yours are bringing. So the whole idea is to, you know, kind of just get out there and enjoy meeting new people. And to me, that's a lot of what...
Yeah, I do.
Go ahead.
Exactly. And building community, I do want to mention La Coco House will be bringing her famous, Rona La Coco will be bringing her world famous goose feathers, and Living Sweet will be bringing their cupcakes. So we're involving other businesses that have special items, specialty items. Rona also wrote a cookbook, and we'll have those there on hand. And then coming up in the summer, there's a summer concert series that Rhythm Music and Performing Arts Studio is putting on in the amphitheater there in Newtown, and there's going to be several concerts, and these concerts will benefit various charities. I love this concept of giving back, where businesses and nonprofits partner up. So mm-hmm. Habitat for Humanity, VetAids, A Little Bit Foundation, and Cystic Fibrosis are just some of the charities that will be benefiting from the summer concerts at the outdoor amphitheater. And you also will be, I know, doing an event in the fall in October, Paint the Town Pink, to help raise awareness and funds for breast cancer and cancer affecting women. So I think that's great, innovative concepts to partner up with the nonprofit community. I'm here today at the Community Council of St. Charles County, an umbrella group of 200 and some nonprofits, and you know, we can all do a little bit to change our world, whether it's giving someone a flower and just bringing a smile to someone's face, whether it's stepping up and doing something really bold and like writing a book like Dale did to raise money for ALS. I mean, that's fantastic. And or something like Chuck, making a difference everywhere he goes in small, meaningful ways. Chuck is the is it president, do you call yourself president or chairperson of the UCBA, a business association of business owners from Newtown. And this group gets together monthly to not only give each other support, but share, you know, marketing tips and ways to get their businesses known outside of the wonderful small town of Newtown into the larger community of St. Charles, Greater St. Louis, and actually Eastern Missouri. So anything else to add about UCBA?
Well, UCBA started probably 6 or 7 years ago. I don't have the exact date, but it's really been a great association for the people that are members here. It's not only businesses in Newtown, but those that are in the locale near Newtown at Elm Street and 370. That interchange has a fair number of businesses, and they are included in our association. But as you mentioned, the Paint Newtown Pink, that's one of our big fundraising efforts that is sponsored by the UCBA. Another event that we have coming up here real soon is our Spring Bazaar. That's going to be held at Glenmark Farms right here in Newtown on May 11th from 10 to 2. And that's an opportunity for people to get those last-minute Mother's Day presents, because it's the Saturday right before Mother's Day. And in the barn itself, we'll have booths from the various merchants here in Newtown, plus also home-based businesses. We'll have booth opportunities there, too. So it's just another fun community event that's held here at Glenmark Farms, which is I'm also a member of UCBA, and just a great environment for getting out and you know, enjoying the outside and then picking up the gift, that special gift for Mother.
Well, give us,
I encourage
the website,
everybody to come to that.
Yeah, I know you have a Facebook page. We want to encourage people to find Secondhand Rose on Facebook and Dwell in Dwellin Design, their Facebook pages, and then UCBA has a Facebook page, correct?
That's correct, uh-huh.
And Newtown has a Facebook page. So we want to really help connect people through social media. And then are those schedules for all these different events posted there?
Yes. And Both Dale and I are pretty active Facebookers as far as our business is concerned. So, and a lot of the other businesses in Newtown are the same. So if you want to know what's happening at our businesses as far as specials are concerned or new products that we have in, Facebook is the place to go. So I would encourage people to sign on and like our pages, and then you can keep abreast of what we're doing.
That's awesome. And exactly. And also to suggest people to, you know, learn about, I love connecting as well and building connections. And, you know, I talk to a lot of people that may not know about some of the real treasures that are over there. And it is a very walkable community. And as you said, you know, a lot of parts of our state, of our country, we've lost those walkable communities where we know our neighbors.
Yeah.
And we're able to say hello, and more than that, you know, build a sense of place and a sense of centeredness in your community. Because I think if you know your neighbors, you feel like it's not just your house you live in; it's your whole neighborhood and your whole community. It's one of the things I love about Missouri. I moved here from Colorado, and you know, there is a really strong sense of community here, and people really get into decorating for the holidays, and Halloween is a huge deal. I've never seen Halloween celebrated any other part of the country as it is here and in this area. And, of course, all the other holidays like Mardi Gras and Christmas. But a lot of local events, and there's a Frontier Park in historic St. Charles. And tomorrow there's going to be a run, a 5K walk run for autism. And the Rhythm Music and Performing Arts Studio is providing some of the music artists, musical artists and bands for that event. They also provide music for things like Miles Against Melanoma and work with the autism spectrum, providing classes. And so these are all dynamic ways businesses can give back to their community, be a vital part of their community, and you know, not just do it for the smart business reasons, which is smart marketing, but to do it for connection and making a difference.
Yeah.
Any other closing thoughts, Dale? Are you still with us? I think he is, and I think I may have muted him out. So let me go back to pulling Dale up on the air here. So, Dale, sorry about that. I muted you out accidentally. Any closing thoughts to share with us as we wrap up the program?
Well, one thing I'd like to throw in when you were talking about the activities within Newtown, here at the Secondhand Rose on the first and second Tuesday of every month at 1 o'clock, I do a free floral demonstration. Sometimes it's how to arrange flowers. Sometimes it's table settings. Sometimes it's craft-oriented, but they are free demonstrations at 1, and they last about an hour. And we welcome anybody and everybody who just wants to get their hands involved in creating something special for their home.
Well, I love that, and that's on my bucket list, my short bucket list, to get over there and learn how to make a floral arrangement in a teapot or any other interesting container. I love that you really think outside the box and encourage people to come up with some interesting containers. So thank you both. It's been a delight. We'll see you next week. I know May 3rd we'll be at the UCDA with Give Back Marketing, and on May 9th we'll be doing the book signing over at Dwell in Design. So thank you, everyone, and we'll see you on social media, and thank you for being part of Alive to Thrive.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Broken down, think that I'll come running back. doesn't kill you, man.